21st, in late June 1919, Germany, along with several other European countries, signed the Treaty of Versailles, which officially ended the First World War. While the United States played a smaller role in the conflict than some of those European countries, the war itself still had a tremendous impact on the country. Some 100,000 soldiers died from wounds and illness contracted while abroad. The First World War also reinvigorated the observance of Decoration Day, which we now call Memorial Day. Our next guest joins us to talk about the century that has passed since the official end of the First World War and how the holiday has developed. Kenneth C. Davis joins us now. He's a historian and the author of Don't Know Much About History and other books in the Don't Know Much About series. His latest book is More Deadly Than War, The Hidden History of the Spanish Flu and the First World War. Kenneth, welcome back to Central Time.
Good afternoon, Judith. It's a pleasure to be with you and a real honor to be speaking today with you about this holiday. It's such an important day on our calendar.
And we'll talk about why that is. Let's start by discussing the original roots of what was then called Decoration Day. How did that come about?
Well, the word decoration comes from an order that was issued by a Civil War general who was also a very prominent politician named John Logan. And he said that on May 30th, everyone should go and decorate graves with fresh flowers, the graves of the fallen soldiers from the recent conflict. This was in 1868, of course, 3 years after the war ended. His name is General John Logan, and he was really calling for the nation to honor the memory of those who had died in service to the country, but specifically the Union, because he talked about those who died fighting to save the Union as well as to break the chains of slavery. So this holiday is really born out of the ashes and tremendous loss of the Civil War, but even from its beginnings, it was a little divisive because Southerners in the former Confederacy saw this as a Union or Northern holiday. Thus, they set up their own Confederate Memorial Days or Decoration Days. But it was meant to be a day to go literally to the cemetery and put fresh flowers on the graves of the fallen.
Which I think we still see today, wreaths, flags, other mementos that are put on those graves.
Oh, absolutely. Of course, the most visible and awesome, in a way, sight is the flags in ceremony at Arlington, in which the old guard army in and around Washington go and place a flag at every single one of the graves at Arlington Cemetery. Arlington itself, a vestige of the American Civil War. It was built on land confiscated from Robert E. Lee and his family during the Civil War. The Quartermaster General of the United States of the Union Army decided that it would be fitting to use Robert E. Lee's property as a cemetery for Union soldiers. And so that's why this holiday is so closely associated with so much of the aftermath of the Civil War. But as you mentioned in the intro there, the 100 years ago, the losses in World War I really changed the way people looked at Memorial Day or Decoration Day.
Well, the First World War also really changed the way people looked at war and warfare, I think, as well. What made the First World War unique among, say, modern day combats and conflicts?
Well, let me preface my answer by saying that by the time the 20th century came around, it was 50 years after the Civil War, the United States had been involved with a very short, brief war against Spain that lasted a few months. It did not have anything like the carnage that the country had experienced during the Civil War, when about 2% of the American population died over the course of 4 years of fighting. So people had forgotten how terrible war was in some respects, and the wounds of the Civil War by the early 20th century had been forgotten. World War I changed that. Now, just to refresh everyone's memory here, World War I begins in August of 1914, and the United States wants nothing to do with it. In fact, Woodrow Wilson, the president at the time, campaigns in 1916 as a peace candidate and says he kept us out of war. Wilson did not want the United States to get involved in this conflict between Germany and Austria and the Turkish Ottoman Empire and the allies on the other side, primarily the British, French, the Russians for a period. The Italians were also part of that alliance. So this was truly a world war being fought across Europe, but in many other places around the world. And it was industrial age war, and that's one of the reasons that it was so different. These men had gone off thinking that this would last a few months. They went off on horseback as if they were, you know, fighting the Napoleonic Wars. And of course, this was the era now of tanks, barbed wire, artillery, battleships of the modern age. And in the first few months of this war, 1 million men die in Europe, an astonishing idea. And of course, the war stretches. It's not until 1917 that the United States finally declares war on Germany, and it's almost another year before they actually send troops to Europe. And that time between early the spring of 1918 and the fall of 1918 is still an extraordinary loss of 100,000 American soldiers in a very few months of time, partly complicated by the Spanish flu.
We're talking with Kenneth C. Davis, historian and author, and we are talking about the origins of the Memorial Day holiday. And Kenneth, I want to pause there because you said that the U.S. didn't get involved until fairly late in the war. What brought the United States in at that point?
Well, it were a combination of factors. Of course, Woodrow Wilson, when he speaks to Congress and asks for the declaration of war, talks about making the world safe for democracy. And that's a very high-minded ideal, but it had very little to do with why we actually went to war. The Germans had been attacking U.S. shipping, most famously the sinking of the Lusitania, but that happened in 1915, and still the United States stayed out. But they continued attacks on American commercial shipping. And then more famously or infamously, the Germans tried to get the Mexicans involved with this in this war, allied against the United States. And a very famous piece of diplomatic correspondence called the Zimmerman Telegram was released, in which the Germans were actively trying to court Mexican support. And they had promised that they would give the Mexicans back territory that had been taken in the 19th century. So that was really the final straw that forced Woodrow Wilson's hand in April of 1917 to declare war. Congress took it up quickly. One of the reasons that America was reluctant at the time was that the two largest immigrant groups in America at the time and powerful political forces were first the Germans. There was a large German-American population and Irish. And neither the Germans who were German-Americans didn't want a war with their home country of Germany. And the Irish certainly weren't interested in going to war to defend the British. So there was a real political quandary of sorts until finally the German efforts are too much even for Wilson to bear. And he asks for war. The war is declared in April of 17. We spend the best part of a year really getting troops ready. And by May of 1918, 1 million young soldiers, doughboys as they were known, had landed in France.
As we said, some 100,000 Americans died as a result of the First World War. But besides those combat deaths, there were also the effects of combat that were seen when they came home. I'm thinking especially the concept of shell shock that really came into the public awareness after World War One.
That's right. Of course, it was. It's been called other things in other wars. Shell shock was the term from World War One, and it certainly wasn't exclusive to Americans. Soldiers in all of the armies, including the British, experienced this this phenomenon, which we would now probably call post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD, the same thing. And in World War II, they called it the thousand-mile stare, the thousand-yard stare. So this is something that's been part of warfare for a long time. Just bringing this very much into the present, the United States Defense Department asked soldiers to and their families to tweet out things for Memorial Day. And what they got was a cascade of complaints about how difficult coming back is, even in these modern times, and the difficulties of what service really means. You know, one of the things that's so important, I think, Judith, on Memorial Day, we are really honoring those, of course, who died in service to the country today. We are honoring those who gave what Abraham Lincoln calls the last full measure of devotion in the Gettysburg Address. But because most Americans have no connection to the military anymore, and even though we have people serving all around the world right now, and many of them in harm's way, we are curiously disconnected, I think, from service and military service in a way we were not, certainly during my father's time when he was in World War I. Many of my friends who went to Vietnam, I was one of the lucky ones because of the lottery, didn't have to go. But we don't have the real connection to what's happening to people who serve, you know, unless we have a neighbor perhaps or know somebody. So this is really something that the country has to contend with much better than we do. And today is a good day to think about that.
As you said, Kenneth, there are these mental and emotional health issues that are nothing new, but certainly are very current in the experience of people coming back from war. Next hour, actually, we'll be talking about how the U.S. military and the VA has dealt with the mental and emotional health of those returning from war. We're talking right now with author and historian Kenneth C. Davis. He's the author of Don't Know Much About History and other books in the Don't Know Much About series. His latest book is More Deadly Than War, The Hidden History of the Spanish Flu and the First World War. And Kenneth is with us today to talk about the history of Memorial Day as we come up on the 100th anniversary of the signing of the Treaty of Versailles, which officially ended the First World War. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about the history of Memorial Day? Do you have any family stories from the First World War? How do you observe the Memorial Day holiday? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or tweet us at Central Time WPR. We'll pick up the conversation after this short break. Stay with us here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Judith Sears Poisson. Right now, we continue our conversation about the end of World War I, a century after it officially ended with the signing of the Treaty of Versailles on June 28, 1919. We're also talking about the history of the Memorial Day holiday. Our guest is author and historian Kenneth C. Davis, and we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. How do you observe Memorial Day? What are some of your takeaways from our conversation so far? And what questions do you have about the holiday? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or tweet us at Central Time WPR. And Kenneth, as we said, it is Memorial Day, and we've discussed a little how Americans established Decoration Day coming out of the Civil War, but how did the First World War kind of reinvigorate that holiday?
Well, the fact is that by the early 20th century, Memorial Day or Decoration Day had become the sort of summer picnic holiday that many people think of it as today, even though it was officially celebrated in most places on May 30th. Now, this was not a national holiday. It was really by proclamation or certain states. But the fact of the losses in 1918 did bring a new spirit of meaningfulness to the holiday. And so the Memorial Day of 1919 marks a new era in the celebration of Decoration Day, not just to focus on the Civil War, but to focus on all those who had given their lives in service to the country. And two very significant aspects of World War I are part of our tradition still. First of all, obviously, the most notable symbol of Memorial Day is probably the Tomb of the Unknown. That was directly related to World War I, and the first unknown was a soldier from World War I, which was known then, of course, as the Great War. It didn't become World War I until much later, after World War II. So the Tomb of the Unknown is part of this, and a lot of people wonder about poppies, why we have those little poppies, paper poppies, being sold. This is another vestige of World War One. The most famous poem out of World War One begins, "In Flanders fields the poppies blow between the crosses row on row that mark our place, and in the sky the larks still bravely singing fly, scarce heard amid the guns below." Written by a Canadian doctor who saw the Flanders field in Belgium, the rows of crosses at this terrible battlefield that had been fought over time and time again during the war. And the poppies were just growing in between the crosses. He was inspired to write this poem. A young American woman reads the poem, decides that poppies are the perfect symbol of loss and remembrance, starts to sell poppies to raise funds for widows and orphans of soldiers, and that becomes known as the poppy movement, and it's still a very meaningful one, not only in the United States, but in England and Canada as well.
Let's go to the phones, and Steve in Tomahawk is up. Hi, Steve.
Hi. I wonder why President Wilson wasn't able to get those 14 points ratified by the Congress and Senate. And if it's true that the war wasn't officially ended until the next president, President Harding, had signed the final document to end the war.
Thanks for that call, Steve.
That's a really good, important question. I wish we had a lot more time for it. Certainly part of it has to do with the fact that President Wilson, a Democrat, was facing a lot of resistance to any of his ideas from a Republican Senate. If that sounds familiar, I suppose it should. Partisanship has always been part of governing in this country. So Wilson had a really hard time selling a lot of the points in the Versailles Treaty, which came out of his famous 14 points, most famously perhaps the League of Nations. Part of the story is interesting, and I talk about this in More Deadly Than War. Wilson got the flu himself, believed to be the Spanish flu, while he was in Paris. His doctor actually thought he'd been poisoned. He was that sick. A lot of people will say that Wilson was not the same after that flu, that his mental capacity, and he was a brilliant man, his reserve, his resolve, were considerably weakened by that. And then, of course, a few months later, while he's coming home, while he's back in the United States trying to pitch the Versailles Treaty, he suffers the stroke even more famously. So those there are a lot of factors there, but you have to really begin with the intransigence of the Republican Party to anything that Wilson wanted to do.
Kenneth, you said that this is the most solemn holiday on our national calendar, and yet, you know, as we've mentioned, a lot of people think of it as kind of the official start of summer, a time to barbecue, you know, picnics, things like that. What have we lost in not really thinking about and reflecting on the meaning of Memorial Day?
Well, I think we do a lot better job of it now than even a few years ago. And certainly I grew up, as I mentioned earlier, during the height of the Vietnam War, when Memorial Day, Decoration Day, really kind of fell into a bit of disfavor or, you know, less popularity in this country because people were so divided over the Vietnam War that Memorial Day had lost its fundamental meaning of honoring those who gave their lives in service to the country. Really took the creation of the Vietnam War Memorial in the 1980s, and then to a degree the Gulf War in 1991, to bring Memorial Day back as a holiday that the country could make the distinction between honoring those who served and their feelings about the war. So it's a, you know, it's been a complicated holiday. Then it's compounded by the fact that marketing has made every holiday, no matter what holiday it is, a sales opportunity, and that's just modern mass marketing and merchandising. A lot of people will say that when the holiday changed from its original May 30th date to a Monday holiday, which was in 1971, that diminished it a little bit. I'm not sure if that's really the case, but we still do, you know. If you go around the country, I think if you go to small towns, you still see the parade, the Boy Scouts, the Cub Scouts, trooping out to honor those who served at the local cemetery. So it is still a very meaningful ceremony in this country, and I think we're struggling with trying to keep that meaning alive.
Before we let you go, Kenneth, I know that things like World War One, certainly World War Two, in countries where the conflict was actually fought on their soil, these conflicts are still very much present for people, whether, you know, they have a personal connection or not. As Americans, we have very fortunately not had a lot of conflicts on our own territory. What should Americans remember and hold on to from the lessons of World War One?
Well, I guess, you know, that makes me think that the most deadly conflict in our history on our soil is still the Civil War, in which more men and more Americans died in the Civil War than all of the other wars put together. So that's why the connection back to the Civil War is extremely significant on this day. When people ask me what to do on Memorial Day, look, we can say Happy Memorial Day because we enjoy the rights and the freedoms and the pursuit of happiness because people did sacrifice for us, and I think we can honor that. One of the best ways to do it is read the Gettysburg Address. It takes about 2.5 minutes. Read it, understand it. Lincoln was speaking about what this holiday ultimately means, that we cannot honor these people any more than what they did honors them, but we must remember that they died for a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. And it's a really splendid way to end this day, I think.
Well, Kenneth, thank you so much for spending time with us. We often have you on holidays, and you always really bring a lot more meaning to the holiday. So thank you for that.
It's my great pleasure, and as I said, an honor. I think it's a really important thing that we connect to this past and bring it to our present. We don't have enough civic engagement, and understanding this sacrifice, I think, helps us get a little bit more interested in making sure we do the right thing. Thank you, Judith, and you should have a happy holiday.
Thank you, Kenneth, to you too. Kenneth C. Davis is a historian and author of Don't Know Much About History and other books in the Don't Know Much About series. His latest book is More Deadly Than War, The Hidden History of the Spanish Flu and the First World War.